You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Hour number two kicking off right now with a little after further review from the combine, Mr. Gibbs.
After further review.
Yes, indeed, gentlemen. Question number one today is the outside. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you something that we're going to ask later on. That's how this day is going.
This is like your moment. This is your time in the sun.
Yep.
You've got an hour to prepare for this, and you come out and
and a
miss.
I changed up a couple things in my original lineup.
All right, it was a little off.
What's your biggest takeaway from the 2016 combine?
I mean, for me personally, with the Cleveland Browns having the number two overall pick, I think it's refreshing that the controversy of who we could potentially pick is down to just two guys. If we address quarterback, it's Wentz or Goff and no one else. The last thing we need is, you know, three or four guys to make it confusing to, you know, that we ultimately did in 2014 and you make the wrong choice. It's one or the other. And by everyone's perspective, you really can't miss. It's just a matter of what flavor you like.
My biggest takeaway is that it is a two-hoss race for the Browns at number two. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, and really my biggest takeaway going in was I was 100% Goff, and I still am a Goff guy. That's my guy.
Oh, it was clear yesterday.
I know, but I now feel comfortable with Wentz, and I do think you have a situation where they say styles make the fights. What kind of style quarterback does Hugh Jackson want to lead this franchise? And that answer will be revealed if it's a pocket passer, a guy who wins with accuracy, footwork, throwing with anticipation, or is it a guy that you want some physical gifts who can win from the pocket but can also do some more things from a mobility standpoint in Carson Wentz, who has more maybe upside but also more downside?
After further review.
Which quarterback helped themselves the most at this year's combine?
I would have to say Carson Wentz, because I think by many people and how they broke it down, you know, Jared Goff was the top quarterback coming out in this year's draft. Following the Senior Bowl, when Carson Wentz proved that he could hang and then to work out the way he did and go throw for throw with Jared Goff, it's why, as Nathan said, it's a two-horse race.
I think Wentz was considered the no-doubt guy after the Senior Bowl because he was the one that the media had gotten their hands on. I thought Goff helped himself at the combine quite a bit. But Brandon Doughty, a guy that I keep talking about from Western Kentucky, I think helped himself, put himself on the map, and would be a guy that certainly could get a look for the Browns maybe if they do a two-quarterback thing later on in this draft.
After further review.
After Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott, who's the best Ohio State player on the board in this year's draft?
I'm going to say Michael Thomas. You know, you heard Sir Andrew Gribble, you know, say at 32 the Cleveland Browns could take him as a wide receiver. I like Michael Thomas. I thought he was an underused asset in that Urban Meyer offense. But again, it was the Urban Meyer offense, and they spread the football around. He wants to run the football. And I believe that a team is going to take him, and he becomes a viable number two option for you immediately.
I think the best player on the board after Bosa and Zeke Elliott. Who did you say?
Thomas.
I say Eli Apple. Corner came out, ran very, very well.
See that one-handed pick?
Sick pick. I like him. I think Darren Lee's got a lot of opportunity. Michael Thomas has got a lot of opportunity. I think that Braxton Miller kind of dropped out of the first round, it seems like.
Yep.
And Adolphus Washington, don't hear as much about him
Slow
anymore.
40.
Slow 40, but big guy, but you're not hearing as much as him anymore. And I wonder how many Buckeyes will ultimately actually go in the first round.
After further review,
Mike Mayock says this is the slowest class of wide receivers that he can remember. How many wide receivers do you think go in the first round this year?
I'm going to say two. The Coleman kid from Baylor, and I think Josh Doctson, somebody takes him in the first round.
Megaquan?
Oh, and Treadwell. Yeah, so three. Sorry. Yes, three.
I'd put the over-under at 2.5. I don't know if it's going to be three. I don't know if it's going to be two. I think it's going to be Treadwell, maybe Corey Coleman from Baylor.
Yeah.
Will Fuller ran that 4.3. Maybe somebody jumps on him. Maybe somebody fell in love with Josh Doctson. Maybe somebody fell in love with Michael Thomas. So I think the over-under is 2.5. I probably, if I had to bet, I would say under. And I would say that if it was an old draft or a typical draft with 32 first-round picks, maybe you get three, because I think pick 32 will be a wide receiver.
After further review.
We all talk about the number two pick. Who do you think is the leader in the clubhouse now to go at number 32 to the Browns?
Is this my personal leader of the clubhouse, in the clubhouse?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't necessarily have, you know, a name that comes to mind. I will go with, if in fact, and to ride that wave, if Michael Thomas is available, you know, you get Josh Gordon coming back, you're going to get a 6'2", big physical, possession-type wide receiver in Michael Thomas opposite him. If it's Benjamin, maybe in the slot, or Hartline in the slot, I think it'd be a great opportunity. But wide receiver at number 32, to me, makes a lot of sense for the Cleveland Browns.
I agree, and my leader in the clubhouse will be Josh Dotson. Failed car brand, turned into Nissan. I know it's spelled differently, but he's going to be a Rolls Royce
in
the orange and brown, my friends. That's my guy. That's my leader. That's where, if you were saying, if we came out of here, if you're saying what gets me to do a little bit of a moonwalk and then dive into a pool of eau jus, you give me Goff or Wentz and Dotson, it's eau jus city, baby. What do you want? What do you want, Gibbs?
That's a great question.
That's why we asked it.
I'd like a beer. I'm like a buffet.
Dude, I'm in the middle of a 10-day detox. There's no alcohol.
It sounds ridiculous.
It's brutal.
You're holding. I told
you. I'm eating a handful of peanuts.
I don't believe in what you're doing. Let me just say that.
That's fine. Well, you're skinny, and you can eat whatever you want.
That's not true.
I'm fat.
I watch what I eat. I eat very clean.
Great.
No dessert. And I also don't drink beer.
Well, that's your loss.
I think it's my gain. I drink tequila,
no,
bourbon.
It's actually Gibbs's gain.
It's Gibbs's gain, right?
Yeah. Currently, it's my gain.
He keeps the tap right there.
I'm not sold on Michael Thomas. I don't know if he wasn't productive because of the Ohio State system and the OCs and all that. All those issues his senior year. I just feel like he wasn't like an impact guy, like a go-to guy when they needed to make someone to make a play.
Did they ever call that play, though, for him?
There's too many unknowns for me to take him at number 32. I feel like that number 32 pick is as good as a first-round pick.
Yep.
You got to hit on it. And I'm not so sure with him. That TCU wide receiver, the kid from TCU, whose name escapes me.
Dotson.
Yeah. I saw him at the podium. That dude's tiny. He's not very big, and he weighs like 200 pounds.
He's over 6 feet.
He is.
You're a big man.
He is not.
Yeah, yes.
No, he's not. That was generous.
They don't do generous things at the combine. They tell you what you are. Josh Dotson, you said, I mean, hold on.
He's not. I was with a couple writers, and a couple of us said, that guy is skin and bones.
He also put together an overall body of workouts that only 13 players in the league. He's 6'2", 202, big hands, 10 inches, 4'5", 40, lower body explosiveness was there, 41-inch vertical, best among receivers, 10'11", broad jump, second overall. That's the explosive athleticism. You know who that's reminiscent of?
Allen Robinson.
This guy's got a big spark score, and he's 6'2", Gibbs. 6'2", come
he
on, man.
He is not 6'2".
Dude, they can't lie. They
I'm
don't
going
lie
to disagree
at the combine.
And at 2016
the
NFL draft, the official draft of the NFL, he's listed actually at 6'3", 195.
So he measured into the combine at 6'2", 202. Worried about the bait? Are you confused? Are you talking about Corey Coleman?
No. This would be a guy from Texas A&M.
Okay, well, we're talking about a guy from TCU.
Oh, maybe. Well,
there's no receivers from Texas A&M.
Okay, then it might have been their TCU guy.
Coleman's a little guy.
He was at the podium.
He would have been at the podium.
Yeah.
But Corey Coleman would have been at the podium, too. This is a big guy.
I might have my guys mixed up. Not out of the realm of possibility. It's one of those days today.
Flaming hot take.
I know.
You know what? I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing.
What?
And by the way, let's all put our hands together. A real team player. He's going to come in here and just flub it all up. So when Sasha Brown, he's like setting the stage for Sashi Brown to come in here and just crush. That's what you're doing. That's
fluffer.
What you're doing.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, Josh Doctson's NFL comparison is to Terrence Williams, who is a big wide receiver.
I'm looking up.
Not as explosive, I would say,
there was a
straight line as Terrence Williams, but just my personal evaluation.
Right.
But good ball skills and a guy that I think could become a very good player, kind of like a 1A. If you had Gordon and Dotson running around and then you throw, you know, a Hartline or a Hawkins or you draft a guy to play in the slot later on, you've got the makings of a pretty strong
correct
offensive group.
Yeah, it's Dotson. I'm looking at his picture right okay now. That right guy was skin and bones. I was worried that the first time over the middle, he'd get crushed and he would never get up again. They would come out and literally sweep up his bones into like a dustpan. It is Dotson.
Okay.
I'm looking. He was at the podium.
Well, I'm glad you are no judge of height. I can tell you that 6'2", 202 is a solid human being.
He was not 202.
Look at the picture of him on ESPN where they're talking about how he was the big riser from day two at the NFL Combine. He looks like a pretty muscular guy to me. I mean,
he was skin and bones.
All right.
Wearing a hoodie at the podium.
Maybe he's been on a cleanse.
The man doesn't need a cleanse.
So we can expect that from you after your cleanse, right?
Darn right, buddy.
Skin and bones.
Physique.
Well, there you go. Profile. All right, we're going to take a break because when we come back.
Is he ready?
Business is about to pick up. I don't know if he's ready, but we're going to take a break so that when he is here, we can go right to him. We will go ahead and have the Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Sasha Brown, in studio here on CBD only on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We are very happy to be joined live in studio right now by the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for your Cleveland Browns, Sashi Brown. Sashi, welcome to the studio.
Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Good, man.
We are doing very, very well. Before we get into the combine, I know you've spent a lot of time in Indy checking out all the prospects who could be new Browns. You spoke a little bit at the combine about the guys who currently are Browns but may hit the free agent market. Today is the tag day. Will there be a player tagged by the Cleveland Browns?
We do not expect to use the tag.
So all right.
There's only a little bit of time left here, so no, we're not going to use the tag, Nathan.
Okay, and any updates that you can give on the negotiations with any of the pending free agents of the Browns?
No, we're working through several. Can't go into more detail than that, but we are working through it still with a few guys. So,
all right.
And this process for you, Sashi, in your new role, is it still, you know, you're knee-deep in the work right now, the NFL Combine, free agency, you know, the draft coming up. Is it still as exciting, you know, as it was the day that you accepted this role moving forward now that you're in the nitty-gritty?
Yeah, it's actually getting a little bit more exciting. Hugh and I were laughing the other day. It'd be good to get past this point. We're really excited about the players being back in about a month. And you know, the draft's coming up, so now you can start to, you know, feel things form. You have some ideas about who you might add to your roster. Seeing the guys, getting to meet them at the combine was really interesting. You get a chance to touch them and feel them for the first time. And we're certainly looking forward to the 30 visits as well. So really getting excited at this point.
And again, in this process, is there a particular characteristic that you're looking for, you know, that we might have missed in the past that is now going to be a part of the Cleveland Browns in the future?
I don't know about from a comparative standpoint, but definitely passion for the game is something that Hugh and I are huge believers in. We want guys that love ball, love coming to work hard, want to get better, want to be real pros, you know, have a career in the NFL. And be the best at their craft. And so that'll be a common trait that we'll look for in all our guys.
You go to the combine, you see every player from every position, you guys have a ton of interviews, you get to meet the people. What was probably the biggest learning experience for you going from in this role compared to other times when you've gone to the combine?
Well, a lot more intensive, you know, in terms of management of the entire staff. A lot of people come to you with different questions, but we had a really organized, well-run operation. And then we had a number of scouts out that helped us. It was our first time really dealing and working side by side with our coaches, which happens there through the interview, formal and informal processes. And we had a great week. Hugh and I got a chance to spend a lot of time together with a number of the coaches, and certainly Pep and Ray both sat in our formal interviews, led some of the discussions there too. So it was a great opportunity to get a chance to feel each other. out, and certainly the amount of time that you spend with the players and with the coaching staff was new, but really enjoyable and valuable.
Obviously, a lot of talk for the Browns about the quarterback position. What did you see from Goff, Wentz, and the other quarterbacks there, and how far along are you in your evaluations into saying, all right, we think this is our guy?
I think we're on pace in terms of, you know, our process. Our scouts have been out, and people, you know, this is the time when the evaluation process gets a lot of publicity. But the reality is it started, you know, last spring
sure.
for on a lot of these guys when they were out for junior days, you know, in the spring, carry forward kind of our roster into the fall, and we do most of our work in the fall. I mean, the key here is not to fall in love with what you see at the very tail end of the process. That's highly publicized and is the last thing you see, so it can have an impression, but not to forget the substantive evaluation. It's really done by our scouts in the fall. The character, the medical at this point is really important, but most of the work that we've done so far in terms of evaluating these players is in the books, and we can't ignore that.
Based on the tape and sure. what you see them playing football.
Based on them actually playing football.
Yes.
And Sashi,
good. I like that.
Novel
take us inside that interview room that, you know, so many fans that follow the combine don't know a whole lot about. And again, what percentage are you talking to them about themselves and their passion about the game? And what percentage are you essentially talking to them about football to understand their knowledge of the X's and O's of the game that they hope to become a professional in?
Yeah, so it depends on the player, depends on the position. Like if I was talking to Nate, knowing, you know, he's got the mental makeup that he has, I'd really want to spend a lot of time with our psychologist leading the discussion.
He needs
hey, you saw my Wonderlic score. Come on.
But, no, it really does depend on the player,
okay.
kind of what he brings to the table. There's certain guys you want to just feel out a little bit more from a X's and O's standpoint, and that's where Ray and Pep Hugh would lead the discussion primarily. There's other guys that you just want to feel them as a person, and that's where I may get involved. Others, there's some background information that we want to clean up and clear up, and I have a better understanding for. And so in those instances as well, there are times we certainly can have, you know, other folks lead the discussion specifically on that, whether it's our security or a psychologist. So,
all right, we asked some people for questions using the hashtag AskSosh, and our buddy Cleve TA came with one. And the question, and I'm sure this relates to hand size, I think is what he's getting at here, but do you automatically eliminate players based on certain measurables by not reaching a specific threshold?
Not automatically, but we do pay attention to them.
You don't want to bet on anomalies.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, there's enough data out there that you can look at that certain size, weight, height, speed, hand size that, you know, can become a problem. But again, going back to the tape, if a guy can throw a ball, we've seen him do it cold weather and otherwise, and I have a problem with the tight spiral. We're not going to get to the combine and decide his hand size precludes him from doing that when we've seen him do it.
And Sashi, I guess Paul DePodesta, and there was a lot of hype, you know, league-wide, nationwide about him being added here to the role for the Cleveland Browns. What role did he play at the combine, if any, and what role is Paul playing for the Cleveland Browns right now?
Yeah, so Paul's very involved in, you know, our strategy around how we're attacking the evaluations and our process getting through the draft. He's got a lot of experience in the area. Paul played football, which people tend to forget, you know, in college. And while he's spent a lot of time and had a lot of success in baseball, he's providing a lot of value in terms of helping us think through, you know, as we structure our department, but also, you know, our decisions and how we will and won't make decisions through our processes. And that can be something as simple as what questions we want to ask, you know, in an interview session. It can be, you know, our strategy in terms of building the roster and as we look at what positions we'll specifically target in the draft versus free agency. You know, all this plays together. The offseason, although there's different components, they really have to fit together.
Sure.
And he's tremendously insightful and just a smart guy, great resource to have.
You've talked about wanting to build through the draft, and when you do that, that means you draft, you develop, and then you retain your players. As you head into your first free agency, you know, there. Let's count Alex Mack, if you were to opt out. There are four kind of main free agents for the Cleveland Browns. If it gets to the point, because a lot of people are asking, well, you know, how could it be that all four might not come back if that's a possible outcome? How do you approach, you know, the valuation and that type of negotiation? How do you see the world of free agency in terms of retaining your own or even bringing in new free agents, especially when it seems that the paradigm's shifting with how much money is actually available? How do you marry what traditional values versus what maybe the new values might be on the open market?
Yeah, it's interesting. We just got out of a meeting talking about the number of free agents that aren't being retained by their own teams, which is a surprising trend around the league. We're not, to answer your question, we're not panicked if we lose any one or bundle of our free agents. We do have a good plan moving forward to look at those guys. Certainly we prefer to retain our own guys. We know them very well, what they do well on the field, what they don't, and how they can fit into our structure moving forward. But we've been in contact with those players and then potentially players at other positions that we'll identify through our process, and when we can talk to those guys in March, we certainly will do that. At the start of free agency, if we feel like that's the best path. We do anticipate we'll have a number of draft picks this year, and we'll be able to fill some holes there too. So again, it's this entire strategy, and free agency just doesn't start to happen and close in the first week of March.
Right.
And so, we'll be mindful and cautious and thoughtful throughout the process. And there's a possibility, again, as I said, that one or more of these guys does come back to us through these next couple of weeks.
We talked about the quarterbacks, and certainly the quarterbacks at the draft get a lot of attention, but there are guys out there. Sam Bradford potentially could be a free agent. RG3 likely to be out there. Colin Kaepernick, they're saying he might want to be out of San Francisco, although they've said they want to retain him. How do you look at, the cost of bringing in a guy who has had some success, but also we know teams don't just let franchise quarterbacks walk versus drafting and developing your own guy. How do you kind of think of that balance?
Yeah, so I think of a guy at this point has solidified himself as a franchise QB. He's not on the market.
Correct.
And so we're really choosing between guys that either have done it and fallen out of that kind of nomenclature of being thought of as a franchise guy, or a guy who has the potential but hasn't risen to that level. And, it's possible that we'll explore some deals with those guys again when we can have some discussion. My sense is quarterbacks like this rarely, hit the market. And if they are, there's probably a pretty damn good reason. So you better be cautious and know what you're buying.
Absolutely.
Last question for me is besides the quarterback position, is there a position that you guys as a staff collectively view that needs to have tangible, much more tangible talent or a tangible upgrade in 1 year with new head coach Hugh Jackson in 2016?
We do think we need to be able to affect the passer on defense. So either it's a three or someone from the outside that can affect the pocket and win one-on-one. Ray's defense is largely predicated on bringing blitzes to create defense when he pressure on the quarterback when he can. But the guy who can, and we've seen it in the Super Bowl, the guy who can, when you can rush forward and get to the quarterback, it makes a big difference because you're dropping another guy in coverage. So we love that to add a guy that can do that. Again, they're almost like quarterbacks. The guys that can do that don't hit the market.
Right.
So we'll look. We do want to make sure that as we're adding players, we're adding young players, in terms of, where we're heading as a team, mm-hmm. and where we need to build. So we're conscious of all those things. And if there's someone who checks enough boxes and we can bring them in at the right value, we'll do that. And we've got the cash and cap room to be able to be aggressive.
How important is the wide receiver position to you in terms of getting, if you do make an investment in a quarterback, you look around the league in Oakland, they draft Amari Cooper, they bring in Michael Crabtree. In Jacksonville, they have a guy named Allen Robinson. They got Allen Hurns, Marquise Lee, signed Julius Thomas. Minnesota, they rely on Adrian Peterson, but they draft Stephon Diggs, they sign Mike Wallace, they've got a Pro Bowl tight end and Kyle Rudolph. When you bring in this quarterback, how important is it to get him the requisite weapons on offense to have success?
You want to be balanced. We like where we are in the backfield. We feel like we've got some guys that can contribute on the outside, but certainly Gary had a great year last year. Travis stepped up and had a good year, and we hope that those guys will be, obviously Gary will, that Travis will be back, but we do feel like we need to have some great play at the wide receiver position, whether it's from the slot, certainly outside. I think what we lacked last year in terms of production, a little bit of what Miles brought in small doses the year
mm-hmm. before, Money Miles,
which is the ability to make the contested catch, move the chains on third down when you need a guy to make make a play for you. And Trav brings a lot of elite speed and ability to get down the hill, downhill. But you can take that away if you drop a safety. We need a guy in coverage when he's being fouled and contested with a backer coming across or a safety coming across, can still bring the ball down. And we'll value being able to add someone that can add that dimension to our roster. And that might be Dwayne. It might be someone else.
knowing that things are fluid and can change at any time, certainly as you go through the interviews and get all the medical information, et cetera, how close are you or do you have the initial draft board set for this year? And if not, when do you expect that first draft board to be ready?
Well, we'll get through the fall. Most every team at this point has their preliminary draft board set based on what their scouts have brought in through the fall. And that can be affected significantly by, you know, medical certainly, but also some character too. I mean, character, you can eliminate a guy off your board. You
know,
guys that are very high up. So you'll add those two components. And so our board will change, you know, over the next month a bit. But to a large degree, we've got the skeleton at least of, you know, what we'll be looking at, you know, come draft day.
If the draft was today, would you know who your guy was at number two?
No, we wouldn't. We're not at that point yet.
Okay. All right, well, we'll let you go back there and get to work so you can get to that point. You got a little bit of time, and obviously free agency coming up, but we appreciate you spending the time with us here, and hope you enjoyed your first combine experience in the role as Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the Cleveland Browns.
I did, and it was very comforting to see you there.
It was good to be there. It was good to be there. It was good to be seen.
Matt, good to spend some time with both of you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see
you soon.
All right.
All right, thanks.
Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Smooth Sasha Brown, with us here on CBD. We'll be back with your comments on what you heard from him. Call us up, 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, 216-578-0850. What your reaction? I want to get it. Your reaction to Sasha Brown on Twitter. Mike Wolf saying he mentioned we need playmakers. Looks like Jimmy may have got this crew right. I'm actually excited. And then Steel Valley Matt says, great insight. Has me thinking Goff now with the comments about heavy evaluation of in-season tape and not so much late combine hype. And, you know, it's funny. He kind of alluded to, he was kind of like, that's a novel concept there. And it is, but I think in this world, it's so easy to get to paralysis by overanalysis, and you lose sight of what's important. We've heard pretty steadfastly now from Sashi and Hugh Jackson that the player's tape and what they see with them playing football is what's going to be the most important piece of their evaluation.
Yeah, and I think your question about the draft board and the two pinnacle things that are, I guess, just happened, one being the combine, and the second thing that's going to happen are, you know, pro days or player interviews, right? Could it, to me, would most drastically affect a draft board as it sets right now, that skeleton that he mentioned, okay? But what did he talk about? Medical, guys that are not going to be injured or guys that don't have any flaws on their medical record, and B, the character issues. And I think because of past history, that is at the top of what this new regime is going to do here in Cleveland.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I thought his answer about, you know, the quarterbacks that would be on the market, potentially like a Kaepernick, a Bradford, an RG3, I thought were very telling that there's a reason that those guys are out there. And it was kind of like what we talked about as well, looking back on, you know, bringing in Austin Davis. This is a guy who started 8 games as a young quarterback, and they opted to let him go. And I think that's telling in the National Football League. Could people be wrong about it? Sure, we've seen it. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, it is a telling thing. Gibbs, when you listen to Sashi and, you know, no tag. Basically, he said no tag today. Free agents. He did mention Travis a couple times in there as a guy that he would like to have back. It you know, we talked about earlier. I think it's tough, and I wanted to try to get at that with the question about the new valuations and the new world. But I think this is a group with Paul DePodesta and what he does that's going to have in their minds what positions are worth overpaying for, what positions translate to actual wins, and how they want to construct their team. And we heard the other thing that was music to my ears is, no old guys. We are going to get, if we
young
bring
players.
People in, it's going to be young players. What were your takeaways, Gibbs?
I think it still leaves the door open in terms of free agency to bring these four guys back some way, shape, or form, but it's not going to be using the tags. And I can't fault them. They have a system set up, and, you know, that's their game plan is what it is. I feel like Travis Benjamin's like their number one priority.
He seems to have been mentioned quite a bit.
That's the name you keep hearing between Sashi, between Hugh Jackson last week. You know, I just Benjamin's the guy that you keep hearing about. So, I mean, he might be the Browns, you know, number one choice. I mean, that's they're doing their due diligence. They're setting up a system. There's at least a plan in place. So
there's no question about that.
I mean, when was the last time we could say that?
Right.
With confidence.
It you haven't, because you've seen or heard certain things then seen other things. I feel pretty confident that when Sashi says we are going to sign young players, that he's not going to then bring in a 32-year-old. He's going to sign young players and only young players.
Right. I agree.
I also thought, you know, the measurables, obviously you don't want to bank on anomalies, but I liked what he said. If a guy has been able to grip a football and throw it and throw a tight spiral and throw it in adverse weather conditions as you know, a guy like Jared Goff did for over 500 yards and 5 touchdowns in 40-degree weather against Arizona State, that, you know, you feel good about his ability and you don't really worry as much about his hand side. I like that. I like that it's about the tape. I like that it's going to be about,
love that it's about the tape.
That's what it should be about. And too often you lose sight of it. I mean, you look at Teddy Bridgewater. I'll just give this as an example. And granted, is Teddy Bridgewater going to be, you know, the next Joe Montana? Probably not. But he certainly was with a kicker's making a 30-yard field goal away from beating the Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs, which is considered to be one of the great defenses, driving them down for that drive. So he can play in this league. But that was a guy that, coming out based on tape, was pretty much a lock to be the number one quarterback taken in that draft. And by the time you went through pro days and you went through no football being played, he almost fell out of the first round. Minnesota traded back into the first round to take him 32nd to get that fifth year with him. So I think it's smart, and I think history has shown that you're doing it based on, you know, tape. As Disco Puma said, he's glad it's not based just on the Senior Bowl roster anymore. That was pretty funny. And I do think that it is the right formula. Now, it's interesting. He said that the board is set, but at the same time, doesn't feel like he completely would know if the pick today, if he had 100% confidence on who it would be going forward.
Yeah, I just think there's probably more combine tape to watch of all these individuals throwing the football and some of their measurables to be evaluated by their scouting staff, by themselves, if they haven't, you know, dug through it all thus far, to get to their positions of choice. And then I think, you know, to go over the medicals, to sit down with the medical staff and understand, you know, if there was an injury, how bad is it? Is it a detriment to, you know, how this player will grow and perform as a professional, as he said, in the NFL? And then, you know, pro days, can they improve? You know, is Joey Bosa going to go from the 4.89 and run the 4.7 that he wanted to run? That's a significant jump. Now, it's not in the controlled environment at the combine, so it'll be taken with a slight grain of salt. But to see explosion and improvement, or in some cases, you can lose ground and lose momentum because of a pro day, as you just mentioned that Teddy did, you know, coming out of his pro day there at Louisville.
I think the other big thing is spending more than 15 minutes with them, like they all got at the combine, and getting to know the actual player. I think that's the one reason I think why Sashi can't, you know, maybe doesn't know right now who he's going to take with that number two pick. I think it's that whole get-to-know process. And it's what we said last week going into the combine. The most important part of the combine might be the interviews.
And I think even furthermore, Gibbs, the reason why he doesn't technically know who he would take if he were to draft some guy today, it coincides with the collaboration process that, you know, and I think Sashi's just being smart and calculated that maybe Hugh Jackson doesn't know who he wants out of Goff and Wentz, potentially. And then maybe Sashi does, but the head coach of the Cleveland Browns does not. And because of the collaboration amongst this group, that if he were to say, I absolutely do, you know, maybe this hits Hugh Jackson's desk in some way, shape, and form. And he was like, hey, what power do I really have when I'm the you know, the head coach, I'm the signal, you know, I'm the play caller, and I want to pick my guy, but yet our potential, you know, EVP, whatever you want to call him, thinks he has his guy, and I don't even know who I'm sold on yet.
I think I would have interpreted if he said, yeah, that would have been
collaborative.
Collective.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We as a group, yeah,
correct,
know who,
yes,
we would want to,
exactly,
take.
And right now they don't.
And I think they do.
Okay. That's fine. You think a lot of things, and
I'm not always right.
Right? This is true.
I do.
You heard it here first, folks.
I would think that if you had, I think they would have a pretty good idea. I think that everything.
It's down to two. If it's a quarterback.
If it's a quarterback. And again, that's what we would do. I don't know what they will do. We'll see. We'll find out in a few weeks down there in Chicago when we return to Chicago. You're coming out this year.
We'll see.
I'm like Jason Gibbs. It's a Jason Gibbs wait and see.
It is.
I'd like you to. One night with me. Beatbox, my boy Beatbox, fine man. Rusty, who was on the golf trip with me in Tampa, also fine man.
Oh, Rusty's going? Then I'm in.
It's a good. That's a. That's
Let me
a,
just name some people that you don't know.
That's wise.
To come out with us.
Yeah.
And make me want to go.
They're fine people.
I didn't say they weren't.
I'm going to be there.
I'm sure
you like
will.
Me. With or maybe on. You don't. I don't know. That's right. Maybe we'll go bowling.
It'd be great.
It would be good. All right, when we come back, final thoughts. Last chance to call up. What did you guys think from hearing from Sashi Brown? Your reaction? Any final questions you got about the Browns here on this Tuesday? It's tag day. One more tag in the report for you. Eric Berry, the Kansas City Chiefs safety, getting the franchise tag as both sides work to a long-term deal. They don't want to let him hit the market. There's really the only one left is will the Rams go with Tremaine Johnson or will they go with Janoris Jenkins? That's really the only question out there as it relates to the tags at this time. We'll be back to wrap up Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura, Gibbs, Wilhelm, CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We'll go to the phone lines, wrap up some of your calls. Scott in Cleveland, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Hey, I was just, I was actually, every time I get to hear Sashi Brown talk, I just get happier and happier. I think whether he has to do a little bit of learning on the job or not, he just seems really solid, and I hope that's true of the all of the new guys.
Yeah.
I guess the thing I wanted to ask you about is did any of you guys have a chance to read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback this week?
I did. I actually read it this morning.
So it really scared me, the Carson Wentz kind of the hype around him, and I guess tying this back to Sashi, I'm glad they're going to put more emphasis on tape. There was the pieces in Peter King's article that basically I'm paraphrasing, but Carson Wentz said, you know, it's just football and everything that comes with the game he thinks he'll handle pretty easily. And a comment like that really scares me as a Browns fan, considering that Peter King or another article I read listed that only two players from the FBS defensively were invited to the combine. So the throws that I've seen Carson Wentz make on some of the YouTube stuff and things that are out there, it looks like he takes a lot of checkdowns and intermediate throws. And for a guy to not carve up defenses at that level and push the ball downfield, I think gives me a lot of concern. Not that he might not be good, but that I'd rather have a sure thing. And I think Sashi and the guys will figure out a way to improve year over year as opposed to taking big swings and potentially lead to big misses.
And you know, I read that article, and I agreed with that, too, because – and I think he's trying to say, look, it's still football. I may have played the FCS level and I'm going to the NFL, but it's still football at the end of the day.
Yep.
I just need to be able to play better against better competition. But, I mean, that article, it included, you know, the governor of North Dakota talking about Wentz. Like, the hype is out of –
come on.
It's a little out of control. But I think on some levels it's warranted. But I like that, you know, from listening to Sashi, we're going to take the best things that we can get out of the analytics world. And we're going to take the best out of the meat and potato scouting world, which is watching the tape, breaking down the film, seeing what people do well, what they don't do well, what's going to translate to what we're trying to do, marrying those things and making a smart decision. So that is what I do feel the best about. Let's go to Rich in Parma. Rich, welcome.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Listen, I'm sure Sashi Brown watched what happened to Newton and Tom Brady in those two games in the playoffs. And I think it brings up the point that without a good offensive line, it doesn't matter what quarterback you put back there. How many years have we seen the Browns quarterbacks on their back, beat up year after year? I think we got to get the line fixed before we do anything else.
So then you would, the only thing you could be suggesting then is to let people leave, because the line is the most invested thing on this team.
Besides the defensive backfield.
First rounder, most expensive guy.
We got to keep Schwartz. We try to keep Mack.
But you just said that.
But your point was the quarterback has been on his back behind a very highly drafted, highly paid, talented offensive line.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think Mack was overrated. I think Schwartz was decent. But I'm saying let's draft some offensive linemen that are excellent and keep the quarterback on their feet. That's
okay. All right. So just so we're all on the same page here. You've in the last two drafts you have used pick 35 on Joel Bitonio, pick 19 overall on Cam Irving. Mitchell Schwartz was early 30 pick in the second round.
36.
Joe Thomas was third overall. Alex Mack was a first round pick as well. You've got
averaged the 31st pick in the NFL
draft
for
your whole line.
For the whole line, I've done the numbers.
The investment has been made there, and I would argue the other side.
generally regarded as being one of the worst offensive lines in the National Football League last year was your Super Bowl champion, Denver Broncos. In fact, if you were to go to Pro Football Focus, and this was something interesting that I did. I don't know if you remember when we talked about this. Pass blocking lines in terms of Pro Football Focus grading for pass blocking offensive lines. Okay, I'm going to give you the top five, and I'm going to give you the bottom five. The five best pass blocking lines in the NFL last year. This is per Pro Football Focus. And we know how often the Browns quarterbacks ended up on their back. So think about that when you listen to these rankings. Number one was Dallas. Number two was Oakland. Number three, the Green Bay Packers, playoff team. Number four, the Carolina Panthers, playoff team, went to the Super Bowl. Number five was the Cleveland Browns. On the other side of it, number 32, dead last in the league, San Diego Superchargers. Second to last in the league, New England Patriots, playoff team, AFC Championship. Third last in the league, Seattle Seahawks.
Playoffs.
Fourth worst in the league, Arizona Cardinals.
Playoffs.
Fifth worst in the league, Kansas City Chiefs.
Playoffs.
So four of the five worst blocking lines in the league.
By this standard,
were playoff teams. All went beyond the first round of the playoffs as well. And what do they have in common? They have their right quarterbacks, and they've got their right system. To me, the offensive line, all we've done is invest in the offensive line. And it hasn't gotten us anywhere. And it boggles my mind that we just had somebody call up and say, we need to invest in the offensive line because our quarterbacks keep getting beaten up. But then it's like, we got to pay these guys and retain them. So if you're asking for a change in personnel, if you're saying the current offensive line is not getting the job.
Correct. Yes.
All right. Final call for the show. Let's go to Ryan in Medina. Ryan, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Just a quick question for you. I apologize if you might have answered these questions in earlier shows. Obviously, you need some of the intangibles as a quarterback, you know, arm strength and things like that. But we got to get somebody that can get in there and get the ball out of his hands quickly.
Exactly. Thank you.
Quarterbacks, you know, for the Browns, hanging on to the ball too long. I mean, you can have the greatest line in the world, but if they're not getting rid of the ball, man, it's
everyone looks bad. Everyone looks bad.
And real quick, too, I haven't really been studying much up on Carson Wentz. I mean, what are his strengths and weaknesses in your opinion, Nathan?
For who?
The kid hasn't played Carson Wentz.
So strengths, just the raw athletic size, talent, the potential, what he brings at 6'5", 237, the athleticism, a very strong arm. What I don't see, and I know he's been under center, I don't care about that. In the NFL today, you're in shotgun so much, it doesn't matter. But what I would say, what I would be concerned about is his ability to process information quickly pre and post snap, because his number one read, he was a see it, throw it guy, and his number one read was open. You watch that tape pretty much all the time. You got to see him be able to go through progressions. That's what I want to see from all accounts. Very smart guy, 4.0 guy. We will see. All right, that'll do it for us today. If you missed the show, check it out on the app at clevelandbrowns.com and hear the interview with Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Sashi Brown. We got a lot of guests lined up for you the rest of the week, talking draft, talking combine, talking free agency as well. So for Matt Wilhelm and Jason Gibbs, I'm Nathan Zagura saying stay tuned for the Golden Boys, and thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.